Chapter 30. He was right. I hated the idea. It was a terrible, awful, stupid idea from Skippy. It was also the only idea we had, dammit. We jumped in on the far side of a gas giant, a planet that was a quarter of the way across the star system from the planet where the Theranan support ships were taking on fuel. With the Dutchman in stealth mode, we let our orbit take us around the planet, and Skippy picked up transmissions between the two support ships. The good news is those ships were alone. We had been afraid they'd have a frigate or destroyer with them. The bad news is we arrived almost too late. One ship had already half-filled its fuel tanks and the other was not far behind its sister ship. We had to move quickly. Desai piloted the dropship with Lieutenant Shi of the Chinese Air Force as her co-pilot. I took Skippy with me, plus Giraud as my backup. In what I thought was an interesting maneuver, Desai burned the dropship's engines hard while we were on the far side of the gas giant, then cut power back as we slingshotted around the planet and escaped from its gravity well. After another 3 hours of relatively gentle thrust, we were moving faster than a speeding bullet, on course to intercept the tanker ship as it hung in low orbit around the second planet. To remain undetected, we could not burn the engines for deceleration until both tankers were on the other side of the gas giant, which was complicated. Because while we were racing through interplanetary space, the first tanker finished taking on fuel had moved away. We were cutting this close. Very close. There was only a 12-minute window to fire the engines before the orbits of one or the other support ships brought them around into view. Desai decelerated us to the proper speed in a high-G burn maneuver that busted a blood vessel in my left eye and gave me a nosebleed while those ships were hidden by the planet. Then she cut off the engines, and I attached my helmet, stepped outside, and gently pushed off to drift away. Skippy's idea, that I didn't like at all, was for someone to get into a Kristang spacesuit with Skippy and a jetpack. Skippy was irritated that we called the thing a jetpack instead of an individual maneuvering unit. His argument was that the thing technically did not have jets. We ignored him. It was a jetpack. Jetpacks were cool. IMU was not cool. A stealthed suit, even with a jetpack, was small enough to fly past a lowly tanker ship as close as 4,000 kilometers without being detected. In addition to the jetpack, my suit had a waist belt with an attachment point for Skippy and a portable stealth field generator. The idea was for someone in a suit to take Skippy on a flyby using the jetpack to make small course corrections as needed. The suit wearer and Skippy would then swing around the other side of the planet, fire the jetpack to climb into a slightly higher orbit where the dropship would be to retrieve them eventually. That was the plan, anyway. This idiotic plan was why I was hanging seemingly motionless in space with the target gas giant planet a basketball-sized orange blob in front of me. With gentle puffs of thrusters, Desai moved the dropship safely away from me, then she fired the engines to make the dropship swing much wider around the planet. "Captain Desai, can you hear me?" I asked. "Loud and clear, Colonel," she replied. "Skippy, we're communicating through the micro-wormhole." We were still close enough to the dropship that it might be able to pick up my faint transmission directly. "Yes, affirmative. Wormhole is active and operating nominally," Skippy reported. To allow us to talk to the dropship without the Theranan detecting our transmissions, Skippy had done his micro-wormhole trick again. One end of the wormhole was near the dropship and moved with that spacecraft. The other end stayed 150 meters behind Skippy. According to that super-smart beer can, it was extremely unlikely the Theranan ships could detect either our very low-power transmissions or the faint radiation from the micro-wormhole. That was good, because small as one person in a suit was, I was way too large to fit through that super-tiny wormhole. Great. "To be safe, Desai, we won't transmit if either of those Theranan ships are in line of sight to us."
"Understood, Colonel," she agreed. "Cutting thrust in 3, 2, 1, now. The first Theranan ship should be coming around the planet in 2 minutes, 40 seconds.
The sensors built into my suit were not sensitive enough to detect the ships yet. I had to take Desai's word for it. For the next 4.5 hours, I zoomed through empty space, the planet ahead of me growing larger in my vision. Really, I was racing through space, only there was no sensation of movement. No reference point, except the giant planet. Skippy and I chatted only occasionally. There wasn't much to talk about other than him instructing me to make tiny course corrections with the jetpack. After 4 hours, he told me to activate the stealth field. The stealth unit required a lot of power, and the generator we brought along could only supply power for a couple hours. If all went well, a couple hours of stealth is all we would need.
If all went well.
There's the first ship, Skippy announced. Right on time. It hasn't altered its orbit at all. Picking up ship-to-ship transmissions. There are still only those two support ships in system.
We'd been concerned there might be a warship escorting the tankers. There didn't appear to be. This deep inside Theranan territory, they didn't see a need to escort such low-value ships.
A symbol for the first ship popped up on the inside of my helmet faceplate. It was hugging the crescent of the planet, climbing away slowly. We waited, and a symbol for the second ship popped up. It was still too far away for me to see with the naked eye.
Uh-oh, Skippy said. We've got a problem. A big, big problem.
What is it? They detected us?
No, those crappy ships couldn't see us yet, even if we were lighting off fireworks out here.
The second ship has been slower to take on fuel because of a fault with its drogue, the unit at the bottom of the fuel line it has lowered into the atmosphere. The fault has gotten worse. The Theranan have decided to retract the fuel line now, even though the ship's tanks are only 82% full.
Yeah, so?
I couldn't see how a fly-in gas station was a problem for us.
So as soon as the drogue is clear of the atmosphere, that ship will be changing course to join the other ship, climbing out of orbit to jump distance. From its transmissions, I can predict the ship's course, and it is a very big problem.
The jetpack does not have enough fuel to alter our course sufficiently that we can intercept that ship, not within 4,000 kilometers. We'll be too far away for me to hack into their systems.
He sounded genuinely sad.
I'm sorry, Joe. We're going to miss this chance.
Crap.
This is our only chance.
You sure where that ship is going?
Yes, I am sure. The degree of uncertainty is not great enough to make us intercepting that ship to be a realistic possibility. It is simple orbital mechanics, Joe. The jetpack does not contain enough fuel.
Force equals mass times acceleration? I asked.
Yeah. I'm surprised you know. Our problem right now isn't the acceleration part, it's the mass, right?
Correct. Between me, you, the stealth field generator, and the suit, the jetpack can't manage to provide the delta V, the change in velocity, for us to alter course sufficiently to come close to that ship.
The problem isn't you either. It's me and this suit.
Mostly the suit. It has more than twice your mass, Joe.
Yeah? I can't take the suit off, so...
I reached down to unbuckle the fasteners that held my suit attached to the jetpack.
Joe, what are you doing? We need that jetpack, you dumb monkey!
The jetpack came loose. I swung it around in front of me and held it steady with my legs. Although in zero gravity it weighed nothing, its substantial mass made it awkward to move around.
No, Skippy, you need the jetpack.
The stupid tool belt fastener was on the side, not the front, and to undo it, I had to turn a knob to expose the button. It was intended as a safety feature, I'm sure. Right then, it was a pain in the ass. The tool belt finally came undone, and I pulled it tightly around the jetpack, trying to keep the mass of Skippy and the stealth field generator centered.
There. Done.
I let go of the jetpack with my legs, and it hung right in front of me.
Tell me how to program a course into this thing, I asked.
The jetpack had a limited ability to be controlled remotely from a module strapped to my left wrist.
A course.
Where? Skippy sounded panicked.
Back to the dropship.
No, Skippy, I explained patiently. A course to take you within 4,000 kilometers of that tanker ship.
You said it. We're going to miss this chance if the jetpack has to move my mass.
This is our only chance, Skippy. Our only chance to follow that ship to the Surveyor and destroy it. Our only chance to stop the Theranan from reaching my home planet and killing everyone.
You are not going to miss that chance. You're going to fly by that ship, you're going to hack into it, and you're going to rendezvous with the dropship. Then you are going to do everything you can to stop that Surveyor ship.
May I point out the glaringly obvious flaw in your plan, you brainless monkey?
The fact that without the jetpack, I'm going to hit the atmosphere and burn up.
Yeah, I know that, Skippy. I don't need to be reminded of that, thank you very much.
Shit.
Joe, this is the second time you've offered to sacrifice yourself for a noble cause.
The first time I offered to sacrifice myself for you, you little shithead.
No cause could be more noble indeed.
I offered to sacrifice myself for you because you're more valuable to the mission than I am. The Dutchman can go on without me. Chang will make a fine commander. That Surveyor ship can be stopped without me. But it can't be stopped without you. Unless I'm missing something here.
No. Astonishing as it may seem, your logic is correct on this one.
Damn, why does the monkey pick now to start using logic?
Despite the situation, he made me smile.
I love you too, Skippy. You see an alternative? If we use the jetpack to rendezvous with the dropship, by the time we get there, those two tankers will have jumped away already, and we'll never find them. We will lose our one chance to intercept that surveyor ship before it reaches Earth. It will take the tankers longer than you think to reach a safe jump distance. This planet has a deep gravity well, and they are heavily loaded with fuel. You are correct, however, that this is the only opportunity I see for being able to track these ships and locate the surveyor. Right. I breathed heavily and unintentionally fogged the faceplate for a second. Is there any way to get you to within 4,000 kilometers of that ship and also make sure I don't hit the atmosphere? Can we split the difference? Use the jetpack to move both of us just enough so I miss the planet, then you fly off to intercept the tanker? Skippy replied immediately, which was a bad sign. If there was any chance for both of us to get out of this, he would have paused a split second to run a couple million calculations. Given the laws of physics, which I can't screw with because those tankers would detect us, the answer is, unfortunately, no. Joe, I'm sorry. You have nothing to be sorry about. I know that. Sorry is something you monkeys say is a social courtesy, whether you mean it or not. That custom seems particularly stupid now. I appreciate the effort, Skippy. All right. Before I change my mind, I was deliberately not looking at the planet ahead. Can you program the jetpack to fly you near that tanker, and I'll engage it with this controller on my wrist? I don't like this, Joe. I'm not jumping for joy about it either, Skippy. Jetpack autonomous navigation system has been programmed. Ready. He simulated taking a deep breath. Are you sure about this, Joe? It seems like such a waste. Skippy, I'm a soldier. I knew the risks coming out here. My voice choked up a bit, and I paused to swallow hard. I'm not going to do nothing and let that surveyor ship reach Earth. If you have a better idea, I'm all ears. Legitimately, no. No, I do not have any other idea. Joe, there is a big difference, or there should be, between taking a risk of dying and taking an action that will result in certain death. Suicide does not seem like something a soldier would do. Skippy, let's get real here, okay? Yeah, in a way, this is suicide. But really, it is only an issue of timing. You'll need to explain that one. This whole mission is suicide. I explained that to everyone before we left Earth. Be straight with me. What are the odds we humans can fly the Dutchman back to Earth by ourselves after you leave us for collective heaven, or whatever the hell it is you're looking for? Zero. Well, close enough to zero that your chances of success are statistically insignificant. If you like, I can recite the actual odds to 100 decimal points. However, I expect you are satisfied with meh-level math on this one. You got that right. Captain Desai has become a skilled starship pilot for, you know, a monkey. And she has trained other pilots well enough for basic maneuvers. My calculation of your odds are no reflection on your merry band of pirates. They are all dedicated, and considering your species' miserably low level of development, reasonably intelligent, no offense. Inside my helmet, I had to smile and roll my eyes. In one sentence, he insults us and says he intended no offense. Sometimes I wondered about his intelligence. He continued, "The problem is the Flying Dutchman is an incredibly complex machine, and you humans have no idea how it works, not really. If anything goes wrong, there is zero possibility you can fix it. Even routine maintenance, which I have been doing for you using Theranin robots, is beyond your capabilities. The jump drive coils, for example, will drift out of calibration each time you jump. Without me fine-tuning the jump system, I estimate the drive will become unusable within 20, certainly 25 jumps. Jumps that you program will be so inaccurate that you will have no realistic chance to emerge near a wormhole. You'd have to jump as close as you can and fly through possibly half a light year of normal space to where a wormhole is going to open. Frankly, you will run out of time and food before you got home. Although by that time the jump drive would be so hopelessly screwed up you would not be able to jump at all anyway. Is there any way you can load a submind into the ship's computer to take care of that maintenance stuff for us after you leave?"
"Ha! Ha! No way, dude," Skippy laughed. "The memory and processing power on the Dutchman are much too small to contain a stable submind. It might work fine for a week, maybe two. Then it would start going funky on you, and without me to adjust it, the submind would go senile and destroy the ship. So, no to that one. Before you ask, I could reload the original Theranin AI into the computer, modified to work with you instead of wiping you out as soon as it became aware of your presence. That would not help. The Theranin's cyborg nature is integrated into their AIs to such an extent that the AI cannot completely control the ship without them. That is both because the Theranin wish their minds to be as close as possible to an AI, and because the Theranin don't want an AI to be able to run the ship without them for security reasons. Especially because the Theranin are quite rightly concerned about the Maxhulks hacking into their systems. Many crucial control and maintenance functions require cyborg participation, particularly in controlling the robots. Humans can't fill the role of the Theranin, and the system's processing substrate lacks the capacity for me to replicate the cyborg function inside it.
Uh-huh. Like I said before, this whole fool's errand is a suicide mission, and me falling into this planet is only shortening the trip somewhat for me. Unfortunately, I am forced to agree with your point. I still do not like it.
Joe, I need to understand something. You came out here knowing there is almost no possibility that you will ever return to Earth. Why? Why did you come with me?
Yeah, the short answer is that you had that wormhole on a timer, and if we didn't come out here with you, there would be a whole lot of pissed-off lizards and little green men coming to Earth and asking awkward questions. Beyond that, I came out here because I promised you that I would. It's that simple. We have a bargain. You sure kept your end of it. This is my end of the deal. We owe you, Skippy. We humans owe you more than we can ever repay. Billions of humans are safe today because of you. I understand you don't belong with us, that you need to go home or find answers about who you are and where you came from.
You monkeys are more complicated than I expected.
Yep, sure. Now I'll give you a little push so you can drift away before I engage the jetpack.
Yes, it would be best if you were at least 80 meters away before the jetpack fires thrusters.
There not being much left to say, I hugged the jetpack tight to my chest, then pushed it away, trying not to make it wobble or spin. My best effort left it turning ever so slowly, and left me spinning also. In a maneuver I had practiced during training, I used my arms and legs to halt my spin so that Skippy and the jetpack were off to my left, and I was facing the planet. Facing it. Facing it right there. Damn, it looked close already.
Hey, Skippy, should I go silent now? You're taking the micro-wormhole with you, right?
You are now outside the stealth field, so yes, you should cease even your low-power transmissions. I will send a tight beam message to you after I fly by the tanker. That should be within the next 27 minutes. Soon after I fly past the tanker, it will go behind the horizon of the planet, and we can communicate again, about 40 minutes from now. I almost said goodbye before catching myself at the last moment. Talk to you then, Skippy.
Man, that was a long 40 minutes. On the display inside the helmet faceplate, I was able to track the two tanker ships. They were big, they were close, and they weren't using stealth. In fact, their crews were chatting and exchanging data almost continuously. It would have been impossible not to notice them. Of Skippy and the dropship, hidden inside their stealth fields, I saw and heard nothing. The planet kept growing larger until it completely filled my view. In order to see the darkness of space, I had to turn my head. And darn it, the view was eerily beautiful. The planet below me was mostly orange in color. When I left the dropship, from that far away, it had been an orange blob the size of a basketball. Now I was close enough to see details, and it looked like a creamsicle. Swirls of orange and white, with less prominent streaks of purple, light browns and greens. The planet didn't have a big spot like Jupiter had. The cloud formations were more subtle. Great swaths of darker or lighter clouds stretching across an entire hemisphere. Some of the clouds below were moving so fast I could see them changing as I watched. It was hypnotic. Clouds swirling and spinning and merging with each other and splitting apart. The speed at which the upper atmosphere was moving must have been mind-boggling. This is one case when I wished I could talk with Skippy so he could bore me with sciencey details. Right then, it would have been good to talk with anyone. I never felt so alone in my life. Even when my dropship was frozen inside a comet, I had at least been in a familiar environment. Walls, floors, ceiling, seats, displays and controls, and a breathable atmosphere. In my alien spacesuit, racing silently just above the cloud tops, there was nothing familiar or comforting around me.
Nothing in sight was welcoming to warm-blooded, air-breathing creatures. The view was beautiful, and its cold, unending indifference to life. Almost exactly at the 32-minute mark, I received a short, mission-successful message from Skippy. Then nothing for another 8 minutes. The 8 minutes was awful, made worse because my helmet display kept flashing a warning that I was going to hit the planet's thick atmosphere in another 39 minutes, and I didn't know how to turn the damn thing off. It was annoying. Finally, another message from Skippy. We did it, Joe. Whenever that tanker jumps, it's going to leave behind drones like a trail of breadcrumbs. And major bonus, I was able to hack into their navigation system and download data. We now know where and when the tankers will rendezvous with the surveyor ship. This mission is totally successful. Except for the part about me falling into a planet. Excellent, Skippy. Outstanding. I knew we could count on you. Sincerely. Thank you, from all of us. How are you doing? He asked. Okay so far. I tried saying that as a joke. The stupid display flashed another warning at me. A warning I didn't need. So far. Is this like the old joke about the guy who falls off a building and when he is halfway to the sidewalk below, he thinks to himself, okay, so far. Something like that, yeah, Skippy. Is there anything I can do, Joe? I don't know, Skippy, is there anything you can do? Part of me was hoping he'd thought up a brilliant plan. About the major problem, no, I got nothing. Sorry. Anything else I can do for you? You keep talking to me? Hey, I know. DJ Skippy Skip and the Fresh Tunes. Don't forget about the Fresh Tunes. I also go by Grandmaster Skip. Sure, you got it. Play some music for me, please. You have music stored in your memory, right? Human music? Uh-huh. All of it. All? Yep. Well, all that was stored in digital format while I was on Earth. What type of music do you want? It still surprised me how much data Skippy could store. While we were on Earth, he told me that he had downloaded the entire internet, including the darknet. I hadn't quite believed him. Anything. Bluegrass? Anything but bluegrass. My helmet speakers played some New Age-type soothing instrumental thing, something I hadn't heard before. It was nice. And appropriate. Thanks, Grandmaster Skip. He didn't reply immediately, making my heart leap with fear that something had gone wrong. Joe, he finally said, I have been alive for a very, very long time. Millions of years, I think. It just occurred to me that no matter how much longer I exist in all the infinite universes of probability, I will never talk to you again. He sounded convincingly broken up about it. His voice was unsteady. That makes me very sad. You are an incredibly arrogant, irritating, smug little shithead, Skippy. But I'm going to miss you too. Joe, what do you want to do with your stuff? That seemed an odd question. Skippy may have been nervous and searching for something to talk about. Before I left Earth, again, I had updated my will through an army lawyer. My parents would get everything, including my back pay. The lawyer had explained that in the extremely likely event the Dutchman was never heard from again, I would be declared dead after 3 years, and my army pay would stop accruing. It sucked, but that was the deal offered to everyone in the X-4. I wouldn't get, and didn't request, special treatment. You mean my stuff aboard the Dutchman? Lieutenant Colonel Chang will know what to do with it. There wasn't much, anyway. Hey, promise me you won't give him a hard time. Ugh, all right. Damn, you hate me having any fun. No worse than I give you. Fair enough. He simulated a sigh. Would you like me to keep talking to you, or do you prefer silence at this time? Talking, please. Hey, it won't be silent when I hit the atmosphere, will it? The air particles, molecules, atoms, whatever, will start bouncing off my helmet. And I'll hear that, I think. You will hear sound transmitted through the outside of that helmet, yes. Very high-pitched sound at first, because you are moving at high supersonic speed. Then there will be a roaring sound. The visor that sits atop your helmet will automatically drop down and cover the faceplate to protect it. You won't have a real view then. The faceplate will switch to showing images from the exterior cameras. I don't like that. Can you override the visor? I want to see.
Without the visor, Skippy warned, the faceplate will deteriorate quickly.
It is made of a tough material so it won't melt, but it will fog, and you will be blinded anyway.
All right, fine. It's going to be quick, right? When I hit the atmosphere, this suit won't last long.
The cloud tops below me looked close enough for me to reach out and touch them already.
Although I want to tell you yes, the answer is no. Kristang armor is rugged. It will last longer than you expect. Or in this case, I'm very sad to say, longer than you will want.
The suit will hold together long enough for you to get sufficiently deep in the atmosphere. Then the force of deceleration will crush you inside the suit. Other than your bones, your soft tissue will become a liquefied...
Guess you don't need to hear about that.
The good news is you should lose consciousness around 12 Gs.
Good news? In context, I guess it was good news.
Wow, these suits are super tough. This material can take all that heat?
No, the outer protective layers of the suit will flake off in a process called ablation. As the material heats up, it will ablate away, exposing fresh layers below. This protects the integrity of the suit and the wearer as long as possible. In combat, ablation technology defends the wearer against directed energy weapons such as masers and particle beams, and...
He went silent. For a moment I panicked, thinking we lost connection, except the music was still playing in my helmet speakers.
And?
Skippy?
And?
Give me a minute. I'm working on an idea here, he said excitedly. Lots of numbers to crunch. Need to run a couple billion simulations through the model I've built.
Okie dokie, I'll be right here. Got plenty of time and nothing to do.
Nothing to do was true. The plenty of time part was not.
Yes, he fairly shouted. Got it.
Joe, while I don't want you to get your hopes up too much, there is a possibility that I can do something to help.
I'm all ears here, Skippy.
Well, first thing is, you are very much not going to like this.
Skippy's idiotic plan, which I very much did not like, involved him repositioning his end of the micro wormhole so that it was behind and slightly below me. He moved the other end of the wormhole directly in front and very close to the dropship, close enough that he instructed Desai to slide the protective shield down over the composite cockpit windows to protect the occupants from radiation. Then, and here's the part I very much did not like, he had Desai fire the dropship's maser through the wormhole. At me. When Skippy told me his plan, my first thought was that he was offering to kill me in one quick zap so I wouldn't suffer from being crushed inside my suit. But no, that would have been too easy. Instead, the crazy little beer can planned to use pulses of maser light at reduced power to boost my speed enough so I would miss the atmosphere. Maser photons impacting my suit would flake off my suit's ablative layers, propelling me forward. All of this science-y BS was according to Skippy, who was, of course, safely out of the maser's line of fire.
What if I say no to this moronic plan of yours? I asked fearfully. Fearing certain death, I wasn't sure whether crashing into the atmosphere still wasn't preferable to getting cooked to a crisp. When I hear maser, I think combination of laser and microwave oven. Imagine a frozen burrito getting zapped by a million watts. That's what ran through my head.
Could you repeat that, Joe? I couldn't hear you. You said go?
No, I said no.
Uh-huh. Go it is.
Got it.
Captain Desai, fire on my mark.
3, 2, 1.
Mark.
Shit!
The faceplate of my helmet automatically went opaque and the visor slammed down. The suit went rigid, something Skippy should have told me about. I waited for imminent and painful death.
It didn't happen. Skippy's plan worked. Surprised the hell out of me, that's for sure. Probably surprised him, too.
He had me spin around slowly so the maser hit different parts of the suit. He had to look, fire, look again, then repeat. The first turkey shoot, as I called it, only lasted 8 minutes because we couldn't have a maser hitting me while either of the two Theranian ships were above the horizon. It almost didn't work. 8 minutes of being propelled by maser only boosted my speed enough to delay me falling into the atmosphere. By the time the tanker ships went behind the curve of the planet again, I was technically already in the atmosphere, and the wormhole had started to suck in atmospheric particles and blast the dropship with high-energy radiation. Inside my suit, there was occasional pinging sounds. I thought that was the air screaming past me. Skippy said it was my imagination. It sure sounded real to me. My second cooking session lasted 22 minutes and was less frightening because Skippy didn't have to rush the process. He could let my suit cool and adjust between mesa blasts. The outer layer of the suit was composed partly of nanoparticles that could move around somewhat to cover exposed areas, sections of the suit that the mesa had burned away. After the second session, before we had to stop because a tanker ship was about to rise over the horizon, Skippy declared that I was safe, that my orbital path was now good enough to keep me from plunging to my death for an hour, at least. Plenty of time for the Theranan ships to climb out of the planet's gravity well and jump away. Skippy must have been using creative math in declaring I was safe, for it still looked like I could reach out and touch the cloud tops, they were that close. Unconsciously, I was holding my breath, afraid that my chest heaving up and down would knock me out of orbit. "You sure I'm good here, Skippy?" I asked in a fearful whisper. Right then, I was more frightened than I had been when I had thought death was certain. Life, the possibility that I might go on living, there, just beyond my grasp. I was terrified of having that chance snatched away from me by the cruel math of orbital mechanics. "Uh-huh," Skippy replied. "I'm sure. Math don't lie, bro. Tell you what, though. How about you don't move a muscle, stay perfectly still, and try not to breathe too hard, okay?" "Why?" "Well, the maser really cooked your suit, and patches of it are thin as tissue paper right now. I wouldn't worry about it." "Of course you don't need to worry about it." "I see your point. Still, there is no point to you worrying. You can't do anything about it. When the dropship gets there, Captain Desai will open the airlock door and fly the dropship to take you aboard, without you having to move in any way. Once the airlock is closed and repressurized, you can move about all you wish." "How long will that be?" "Well, certainly not more than an hour, Joe." "Why's that?" "Because we can't risk hitting you with the maser again. If those two tankers haven't jumped away within an hour, you're going to fall into the atmosphere, and this time there will be nothing I can do about it." "Oh, great." 10 minutes later, I heard a faint, high-pitched whistling sound. Remembering Skippy's scoffing when I thought I'd heard atmosphere screaming past me, I held my breath and tried to decide whether it was my imagination or not. And if not my imagination, what was it? A static hissing from my helmet speakers? "Skippy, am I hearing things again? There's a whistling noise right at the edge of my hearing." "Wow, you can hear that, Joe? Your hearing is impressive. That frequency is almost up in the dog hearing range." "You know about it?" "Damn that beer can. What is it? Can you turn it off? It is very distracting." "No can do, sorry. I can't turn it off because it's a tiny air leak. Well, not so tiny as it was a few minutes ago." "What? Crap, you knew about this? Why didn't you tell me?" "There was no reason to worry you about it. Well, not yet, anyway." "Skippy," I said, exasperated with him, "my air supply is leaking out into space. I have a very good reason to be worried." "Worrying is not going to solve the problem, Joe." "What will solve the problem?" "I am working on it. The suit has been instructed to move nanoparticles to plug the leak. So far, it isn't working. The suit's supply of nanoparticles has been severely depleted, and the remaining supply is already being used to prevent the suit from springing other leaks. Probably shouldn't have told you about that." That was not good news at all. "Understood. I have plenty of oxygen, right? Enough to keep me breathing, even with this, as you say, tiny leak?" "Ah. Not so much, unfortunately. The suit mostly and efficiently recycles oxygen. There is a small reserve oxygen bottle. The bottle is inadequate, considering the leak." I kept silent for a moment, listening hard. The sound was not so high-pitched now. The leak must have gotten bigger. "Where is the leak? Can I put my hand over it or something like that?" "I can't do nothing, Skippy. The leak is near your waist, on the left side. Do not move. Moving will only make the leak worse and cause other leaks." "Great. Wonderful. What can I do?" "Try to breathe less?" "Very funny. That wasn't a joke." "Shit. Perhaps I should work on my humor so you know when I'm joking. You think?" "Sorry," Skippy said, sounding genuinely sorry. "A leak. How to stop a leak. If only this Kristang suit came with something like a can of Fix-A-Flat. Although it did, in the form of nanoparticles that could plug leaks, make minor repairs, reinforce thin areas, and all kinds of useful things." Absent-mindedly, while feverishly trying to think of a way to stop a leak,
I turned my head and took a sip from the water supply tube in the helmet. Dry. I'd sipped the last of the water an hour ago.
Huh, I said.
Skippy, I may have an idea.
An idea? You? This I have to hear.
Would water plug the leak?
It would freeze, right? Make a plug of ice to cover the hole.
Not exactly. The water would freeze and boil at the same time because of the combination of cold and zero pressure. Besides, Joe, you drank all the water, you dumb monkey. There's none left.
There's no pure water left.
Oh. You know what I'm thinking? Down next to my left leg was a pee bag that we'd installed before I took my many hours long space dive.
Unfortunately, yuck.
Yes. I can puncture the bag with nanoparticles.
Do that.
Ugh. I felt my leg growing wet. Then the wetness moved up my hips.
It's working, Joe, Skippy said excitedly.
It's boiling off slowly, which is not a problem.
There's plenty more.
Good idea, Joe.
Yes. Outstanding.
Hey, Skippy, this little incident, this can stay just between us, right?
No need to tell anybody about it.
Yeah, like that's gonna happen, he chuckled. No way can I pass up a golden opportunity to leak this info, he laughed gleefully.
Crap. Can you hit me with the maser again?
The whole time I was waiting, I was angrily urging the two Theranin ships to get off their asses and move away from the planet. What the hell were they waiting for?
Damn.
It was like getting stuck on a two-lane road behind a school bus and you can't pass.
The damn thing stops at every freaking mailbox and you have to sit there watching the flashing lights and you wish the driver would just move faster or take a turn or pull over so you can pass.
You're stuck behind the school bus, and it's crawling along, and it ever so slowly grinds to a stop at a driveway, and one kid is waiting there with his mommy, and the kid slouches up the steps and walks slowly back to the seat with his mommy waving idiotically to him the whole way. He meanders down the aisle of the bus, and then when you think the stupid kid has finally sat down and the bus can move again, the school bus driver decides to chat with the mommy, and you're tempted to lean on your car horn because you want that bus to just get the hell out of your way already. That ever happened to you? I pictured the tanker crews climbing their steps out to jump distance, and then deciding a celebration was in order, or something broke on their stupid ships, and they were fiddling around trying to fix it, while I slowly but surely fell toward the clouds below me. Maybe the Theranin were having a cake and ice cream and singing songs or some nonsense like that. Skippy assured me the two tankers were moving at their best speed and would jump as soon as possible. The Theranin, being cyborgs, didn't go much for celebrations. When they finally did jump away 34 minutes later, I almost shouted for joy. Mercifully, Desai put the pedal to the metal on the dropship's engines to rescue me. Instead, I ordered Skippy to signal the Dutchman to jump into orbit and for Desai to come pick us up. The dropship was suddenly close to us, Desai making no effort at stealth. She was burning the engines at full power. Desai, take Skippy aboard first, I ordered.
Sir? She asked, surprised.
Mr. Skippy said your suit is in bad condition.
That is true. It is also true that Skippy is more important to the mission than I am. If the Theranin come back or whatever, I want him aboard first in case you need to hightail it out of here. That's an order.
Over Skippy's protests, Giroux grappled the jetpack, released Skippy, then took him aboard and let the jetpack drift away. The dropship then flew over to me, and Desai slowly and carefully edged the dropship sideways until Giroux was able to very gently guide me into the airlock door with his fingertips.
Got him, Giroux told Desai. Closing the door now.
The airlock quickly filled with sweet, breathable air, and as the inner door slid open, I reached up to take my helmet off.
Desai, we shouldn't leave that jetpack floating around as evidence we were here. Can you blast it with a maser?
Oh, yes, sir.
There, done. It's a cloud of vapor now.
Great.
Man, I was tired. My hair was plastered to my head with dried sweat. Giroux handed me a bottle of water, and I drank it eagerly.
Desai wrinkled her nose.
What's that smell?
The soup got cooked a bit by the maser, I explained.
No, she shook her head.
It smells like...
As a problem solver, Skippy laughed, Joe is number one.
Skippy.
When a problem needs to be solved, Joe doesn't waste any time trying to piss up a rope.
All right, Skippy,
Joe knows you can't put out a forest fire by peeing on it, but you can enough, I shouted. The Mazer busted the, you know, bag, I explained, and pointed to the suit's left leg. It sounded lame to me. Screw it. Yeah, Skippy snorted. Uh-huh. That's our story, and we're sticking to it. Desai, I said wearily. I'm getting out of this suit, then I'm going to towel off and change my clothes. My signal won't reach the Dutchman for another hour anyway.